Good morning. God's grace, peace, and joy to each one of you. I'm afraid I might get dyslexic this morning. I don't know. It's kind of funny how small things sometimes mess you up mentally, or me at least. So we'll see how this goes. For the message this morning, it's probably, in a way, a thing I've been working on indirectly ever since I became a Christian. And maybe more directly, almost the last year. And I hope I can make sense. It's a subject where I would start studying. I thought, this is fairly simple. I had actually had a brother from Pennsylvania request that I preach some message on this. So hopefully he can go online or somewhere, because I'm not planning to travel there to do it for him. But then the more I studied it, the more this thing kept getting bigger and bigger and fragmenting on me. So I probably could have out of a dozen messages. So I kind of feel like I'm building a small island when I should really be building a continent type of thing. At the same time, I didn't know if you all would be into an afternoon and evening session, so I'll try to do what I can with this. Before I start, I'm going to have some help. First of all, I've got some sheets here. They won't make sense maybe initially, but they will later. Tim, would you pass them out for me? There should be one for everybody. Brian, would you help me set the pulpit down, please?
Which side do you want?
I've had a difficult morning. It seemed like the biggest panic was a couple minutes ago. I opened my PowerPoint and Microsoft is having some issues where they don't automatically save my changes, but I think I found the backed up copy, so good to go here. You turn to 1 John chapter 2. And to start off with, I'll just tell you all a story, especially for the children, since probably some of the rest of this will be a little bit different. The title I think I'll use this morning is From Roots to Fruit. From Roots to Fruits. And maybe I'll just call it Introduction, because very likely I'll go on as with time on different messages. Just a second here. I don't think my computer's done with me yet. Here we go. We'll see if it finds itself here. So there's a story of this farmer. I guess you call a farmer somebody that has an orchard. And he loved his fruit trees. So when he planted his trees, he would dig a deep hole. He would put the best mulch, fertilizer, things down underneath. Then he planted his trees on top of this. And he kept the weeds down. He made sure his trees had plenty of water. And let's see, that's not exactly what we were hoping to see, is it? Huh? Well, I with something. Let's see here. Oh, great. And so he kept, he took good care of the trees. But it was interesting, most of his effort, at least initially, was focused on the ground and below the ground. So, you know, it was watering, it was fertilizing, it was taking care of all this stuff. And let me see. Well, I'm sorry, I feel like I'm doing a computer class instead of a message. My apologies here, I'm not sure. Like I said, let's see what we got going on here. There we go. Now, apply. There we go now. Now, if you only work. Okay, if you wonder why I go to all the hassle, I'm just going to break in here and tell you. Did you know that if I just talk, you will, at the max, let's say you get very emotionally involved, at the maximum, you'll remember 15 to 20%. If I show you something and talk, you'll remember about three times that. So that's why I go to this hassle. Anyway, so this farmer had this orchard. He planted this orchard. As time went on, he had to pay attention to the fruit, right? He had to prune. I know I worked in an orchard one time. He did the same thing. Sometimes you have a cluster of apples or whatever, there's too many on one branch, so you've got to pick off the extra. So it's not that he could focus solely on the root part of this thing, but at the same time, his orchard, he had an orchard like no one else, and he actually became wealthy over the years through all this. And all the other farmers were like, wow, why does he have so much better success than we do in his time and his place? And with time, he actually started backing off. It was doing so well, really. And was that work all necessary as far as digging down so deep, making sure it had just a certain amount of water, putting all this fertilizer down as deep as he could? He started backing off. And finally, his trees, as the story goes, actually died. And as he dug them up, he dug one or two up to see what in the world had happened. And here, the roots had all withered up and died. And you know what? A tree's got a bad root system. Apples and pears, peaches, whatever go along with it, right? And so that's the analogy I'll be using this morning as we think about this, from roots to fruits. And again, this is a tremendously broad thing. And before I get into it anymore, I did want to tell you that. Some of these messages I've been preaching, probably especially more the past year, are, can I say, outworkings or extensions of some other work that I'm doing. And so if at any time you think I'm overdoing it, you're welcome to come tell me. Just one thing I would ask of you if you do that is I also like sermon suggestions. So if you have something else I should be preaching about instead to balance me out, go ahead and give them to me. If I'm too scary to talk to, there's a mailbox back there, or there's an email address on the bottom of that page that can reach me too. So I love feedback and things. I did give this sheet to a number of you that was handed out, and I actually won't necessarily cover a lot of it, but I thought maybe it could finish building a little bit bigger island than what I have time for this morning. Okay, back to 1 John chapter 2. Does anybody remember Phil read a few verses out of here last Sunday. Does anybody remember which verses those were? I like to test memories. It looks like you're going to not get it for me, huh? Okay, thank you. 15 through 17. So let's just read those exact same verses, and I'll just use that as a springboard this morning. 1 John chapter 2, verse 15. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. So verse 15, we're told not to love the world. Now that's not talking about nature, right? That's talking about the world system. Sometimes we talk about the two kingdom concept. It's talking about the kingdom of darkness, the things that go with it, the things that appeal to my flesh from that kingdom of darkness. So it's okay to love the birds, the mountains, the trees, and even the people. But we're He's saying, love not this world system, this the dark kingdom aspect of it. Neither the things that are in the world, nor any of the things that go along with that kingdom. And he says, if we love that world in that way, if we love the world system, if we love the dark kingdom, the love of the Father is not in me if I do that. For all that is in the world, again referring to that world system, the dark kingdom, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And he tells us the world passeth away, and the lust, all those things go along with it. It's only as we do, as we abide and do the will of God, that we can abide forever. Now, in those three categories, we often have those described like this. So we think of the lust of the flesh. That's often the fleshly or natural desires. You could do it from drinking alcohol to whatever your fleshly or natural desires are. Moral issues are often described as in that. Two is the lust of the eyes. And that's often described as that which the eye can see as being desirable. Is it driving down the road, seeing a wrong billboard, seeing something else that you just start coveting? It's often described as that. And third one, the pride of life, is often described as the mental or emotional pull of prestige, of honor that you can get from people around you, okay? Now, in looking at this verse, maybe I dissected it a bit too hard. I don't know. You're welcome to disagree with me. But I'd like to actually propose a little bit different view to you. I like to think of the lust of the flesh as the natural responses to things life brings. In other words, as I get into this message, I'll be referring to these things as the fruit sins. They're the thing I automatically respond in certain ways. For example, if I'm driving down the road and somebody risks their life to pull out in front of me, I naturally have a response. It's not like I have to sit there and meditate now how should I respond. I just tell you how I respond. Unfortunately, I have struggled with as much as anyone, is impatience. Come on, I mean, you stupid person, you know, you can go on and on, but we'll stop there. So that's how I'm describing the lust of the flesh, just that natural things that rise up within me, impatience, anger, bitter, well, resentment. I'm going to be splitting hairs on some of this, so I have to be careful which word I use. And it's not that the words are that important, but I think you'll understand as we go. Okay, the lust of the eyes I want to think about as the things that are in my mind. How can I describe this? The natural desires that we tend to give a wrong value and importance to. So I call those natural desire sins. They're just the things I naturally desire. Is it, I'll use acceptance as an illustration. I'll use some others. But you know, that's built into us. We don't necessarily have to think a lot about it. At the same time, when we think, we want it. Okay, and then the third one is the pride of life. And as I think of the pride of life, I'd like to describe that this way. The driving motives of my heart. Those drivers, you know, when you, just like my computer here, I think maybe that's part of the problem, is it's got drivers. It's got things that tell it how to project this picture, how to print that to that printer. We call that a driver. And just so in my heart, I have drivers. I have things that dictate my response to how I respond to the situations I face. And often, these drivers, I would probably never mention, at least not publicly. And often the biggest problem as I look into my own heart is I don't even like to admit that I have these drivers to myself. And I'm going to describe these as root sins. And that's where that paper that you have comes in, and we'll go into that a bit more. Well, you're in 1 John chapter 2. This page over to 1 John chapter 5. 1 John chapter 5, verse 14. That's some favorite verses of a good friend I have, and let's see. I enjoy him right along with him, even though we draw some slightly different conclusions. 1 John chapter 5, verse 14. And this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything according to his will, anything I ask according to God's will, he hears us. And we know, and if we know, he's building, and if we know that God hears us, whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we desired of him. So just as we knelt in prayer and asked God to help Brother Steve Schrock or whoever, we know that God heard us, and we know that he will answer that prayer. Now, it might not be in the way that I would like or that I comprehend, okay? But he will answer that prayer, is what he's saying. So going on, if any man see his brother sin a sin which is not unto death, the man that sees this brother do this, shall ask, and he, God, shall give him, the man that saw this sin, and loved and prayed for the other man, life for them, the one who sinned, that sinned not unto death. And then he goes on and says, there is a sin unto death, and I say not that he shall pray for it. All righteousness is sin, and there is a sin not unto death. So evidently, I can see my brother have a fault or a sin, whatever you want to call it. And depending what type of sin it is, I can ask God to, hey, I could go to my father and say, Father, that person there is struggling. He's got some issues in his life, and I don't think he really sees them for what they are. Can you give me life for him? And depending what they're in, he will. Now, that said, there's other sins that if I see my brother struggling with them, I need to pray that my brother repents, not that he be excused from that. And that's a whole message by itself, so I'll quit there. So this morning, I'm not planning to give you a list of sins unto death and not unto death. In fact, I think personally, I feel that that could be rather dangerous because then we start making excuses for that. But the thought does fascinate me in that there is a difference given to different sins. And so that's where I'm coming from. As I share this list, we want to be careful. In all this, we may never forget verse 17 there, the first part. All unrighteousness is sin. Don't ever forget that. And we dare not minimize or excuse sin in any shape or form. At the same time, I think it does help us to understand and maybe categorize sin to an extent to help us understand how the battle is fought. I notice even how in these verses, it's even a sin that's not known to the committer of the sin needs to have somebody praying for it to be excused. Isn't that amazing? Also, just think about this for a minute. What does sin do? Anybody? Can you tell me what sin does of any sort? Okay, so it creates a barrier between me and God. It separates. It's no longer close. It's no longer tight, right? And so if that's the case, if I sin even something that maybe I don't fully understand or comprehend what's happening or what I'm doing, if that creates a barrier between me and God and I continue it and nobody prays for me, what's going to happen? Anyone? It leads away from God, right? We don't maybe, as human beings, maybe we don't know the exact cutoff place where now he's a sinner completely, he's lost. At the same time, it puts us on a trajectory that takes us away from God. I could read John, I'll just read some of these other verses. Turn to Galatians chapter 5. Meanwhile, I'll read John chapter 8, verse 34. Jesus answered them, verily, verily, I say unto you, whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. So it doesn't really matter what degree or what kind of sin I'm involved in. If I'm involved in sin, I'm the servant of sin, and as such, I can't fully be a servant of God until that's resolved in some way. Now, I'll explain a little bit why I go into this the way I do, and then I'll read Galatians chapter 5, verse 16. For years as a young Christian, okay, for example, I struggled with attitudes. There was some, I'm not here to run anybody down, but I'll just be out with you. There was some, especially some ladies in our church that knew everything about everybody. In fact, they knew quite a bit more about me than what I did myself, and they'd like to get on the phone and talk about this with each other. And it made me some grievous attitudes, to be quite frank with you. I struggled with those people tremendously. They had my life mapped out. They knew what girl I liked, and we won't go whether they were right or wrong, but they knew a lot of stuff about me, and it ticked me off to no end. And as such, I would struggle with this attitude, okay? I also struggle with some moral issues over the same time. And when I tried to fight this battle against sin, when I tried to have victory in my life, guess what I would do is I would try to start at the top and work down, if you will. I would say, well, I knew there was some fruit in my life that wasn't what it should be. So rather than being willing to go and deal with the roots that were in my heart, I would say, well, don't think those thoughts, right? Whether it's impure thoughts or whether it was disparaging thoughts about these gossips. So just don't think them, don't think them. Well, how successful is that? You know, the root was down there in the ground, and that was just a fruit coming up out. And so for years I struggled. I didn't really get anywhere in my Christian life because I was working in a way that didn't work. Have you ever seen these advertisements? They say, save, let's say, 70%, right? Well, guess what? To save 70%, you still have to spend 30% of whatever the retail price is, right? And that's often how we as Christians, we some But and if somebody's in debt and they owe this big debt, how are they going to get out of debt? By spending that 30% continually, right? Just acquiring more and more things at a good high, at a low value price, because that gets you out of debt. Well, of course not. We'd say how stupid. But that's how we approach the Christian life. We start, we're like, well, I got to start at the top and work down. And so this is my burden for myself and for all of us, that we could see how to start at the root of the issue. And again, I don't have enough time to really maybe cover all this, but let's go to Galatians chapter 5, verse 16. Now, those of you that can benefit from this message are going to have to be smart enough to apply some of this, because I don't have time to go into a lot of explanations. I may in a later message. But then Galatians chapter 5, verse 16 through chapter 6, verse 10. This I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. For the flesh lusteth against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh, and these are contrary one to the other, so that ye cannot do the things ye would. But if ye be led of the Spirit, ye are not under the law. Now the works of the flesh are manifest, which are these: adultery, fornication, uncleanness, lasciviousness, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, variance, emulations, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and such like, of which I told you before, as I have also told you in time past, that they which do such things shall not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. But they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another. Brethren, if a man be taken in a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. For if a man think himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. But let every man prove his own work, then shall he have rejoicing in himself alone and not in another. For every man shall bear his own burden. Let him that is taught in the word communicate unto him that teacheth in all good things. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. For whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. For he that soweth to his flesh shall of the flesh reap corruption. But he that soweth to the Spirit shall of the Spirit reap life everlasting. And let us not be weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap, if we faint not. As we have therefore opportunity, let us do good unto all men, especially unto them who are the household of faith. Okay. Switching gears a bit here. Again, I want to reiterate, we're not excusing any kind of sin. At the same time, we have to understand where we're going and what we're trying to work on. So because of that, sometimes it's helpful to understand how sin works in me. And in a way, this is a negative message. There's a lot of positive side to this, and we'll hopefully sometime have a chance to look at some of that. But to help us how, if we're going to win the battle for victory over sin, we need to know what sin is, and to a limited extent, we need to understand how sin works in us, in our hearts. So let's do this. Now, I'm going to warn you, next bit is very sarcastic, so don't take that wrong. It's how I felt best to do it. So, how many of you have ever been angry, like seriously angry in your life? Okay, quite a few. Okay, now, so you enjoy that feeling of being angry, don't you? You wake up, the days you've been angry, you woke up in the morning and said, I'm going to be angry today and I just can't wait. Right? Okay, let's do this one. How many of you have been frustrated, extremely frustrated? It kind of goes along with anger somewhat, doesn't it? Okay? So you plan your days of frustration out, don't you? You get your calendar out and your red pen and like March, well, maybe for me, March 13th. Of 2017, I'm going to be terribly frustrated. I got meetings starting then, that's why I say that. So I'm going to be terribly frustrated. And then you look at the calendar like, whew, it's a couple weeks away. It's getting closer. I can't wait till March 13 comes because I'm going to be frustrated that day. Well, okay. How many of you have been impatient? I'm picking on myself here. So quite a few of us again, right? So that's a wonderful feeling, right? Don't you just love when somebody pulls out in front of you, like I said earlier? Or maybe it's just that slow person that comes into your day. I've got a couple customers, especially the one, he's a repeat customer, of kind of questionable value to me, at least on the business front. And he can talk all day. I mean, he'll tell me that my house needs to be bigger. He did that yesterday, and just on and on. And I've got 10,000 better things to do than have him trying to order my life up for me. And I just love it, right? I just look forward to the day that so-and-so calls and comes and wants to pick up this small part. Well, so it goes. You know, I'd say all of us, maybe some of you aren't as impatient as I tend to be. Maybe you don't have a temper problem. God bless you. That's not fun. But I'd say it's safe to say all of us have at least some of these feelings. And they're not something we deliberately cultivate. You know, we don't sit around like, I'm going to teach myself how to be angry. I'm going to teach myself how to really be frustrated or how to be really impatient. You know, when you face it, boom, it's there. It doesn't take much training. In fact, it takes opposite. Okay? So they spring from other cause. In other words, they're not an isolated instance. Most of us would probably be more unhappy if we would never get angry again, right? Or frustrated or impatient. But again, think about it. If I try to work from the top down, so I've got this fruit of anger, now what do I do with it? Or maybe we're working with somebody else that's angry and they get, ooh, they lose their temper and we're like, ooh, brother, you shouldn't get angry. Well, don't you think he knows that already? If most angry people do, and it really improves their mood to tell them that. Okay, so let's go back to the tree analogy. Just as it takes a healthy root to have a healthy fruit, so unhealthy feelings and attitudes come from unhealthy roots. Let me repeat that. Just as it takes a healthy root to have a healthy fruit, so unhealthy feelings and attitudes come from unhealthy roots. Okay, just think back to the first verses I read there in John chapter 2, verse 15 through 17. And so let's go back to the categories I gave you, except I'm going to flip them around. I'm going to start with root sins this time. So as we think of root sins, let's describe them this way. And again, I'm going to do a visual. So we have root sins. Make sure my thing is, yeah. Root sins, that which is unseen. You don't see the roots of the tree, right? Itself. Yet causes that which is seen. In Paraguay, growing up in Paraguay till I was 11, we had this stuff we called mata campo. And I'm not really sure how to describe it. It was kind of a... had long green, dark green leaves that kind of tapered. And it was a stalk. It starts small, but it comes up out of the ground. And that was the nastiest stuff. I just hated mata campo, mainly because Dad thought it was good work for me. And there was a couple reasons why it was good work for me. First off is spray didn't do the best job of killing it for whatever reasons. I don't know. It was a broad leaf. At the same time, it didn't seem like T4D and some of those quite did it. And the other thing was, if you mowed it, you know, okay, you can mow a pasture, that stuff would actually beat the grass back up. So the more you left that root go, the worse it got. And the only way to really get rid of it was to take a hoe out there and dig out the root, okay? And that was serious work, especially when it was 100 degrees. Thankfully, Paraguay is a country where you get siestas, so at least it wasn't up here. So at least I could always look forward to you just work a couple hours, go back in and I loaf for a couple minutes, go back out and do it. But that was just the orneriest stuff. And it's because of that root, you could do a lot of stuff. You know, even with my hoe, it was a temptation to just knock that plant over. It looked good, right? But it wasn't hardly a week or two later that thing would be back up there. And it's because that root was implanted. And so the fruit was just the stalk that came up out of there, okay? So we have root sins. That which is unseen yet causes that which is seen. So just because you think, now here's the funny thing about root sins is often we feel they're hid pretty well. But you work with people and place people much, you soon start, and it's dangerous to get too set, but you can soon start guessing at their root sins because we follow patterns pretty much. In fact, one individual we were working with one time that kind of amused me, one of the most obvious things about him was that they struggled in a way with their church standard. And after spending a number of hours with this individual, they turn around and say, and by the way, I kind of struggle with our church stand on some dress issues. Well, you didn't have to be told. You could see it, right? And that's a little bit like root sins, even though they manifest themselves in fruit. That's where that paper comes in I gave you. Okay. The next classification I have here is natural desire sins. That which we naturally desire and give improper, notice that word, improper value and importance. So it's not that these natural desires are wrong or that I should feel guilty just because I have them. but it's when I allow them to control me. And when they take over. And then it becomes very wrong. And then the third one is fruit sins. That which is seen and springs forth because of the unseen. Now, I hope you can follow me here. So the fruit sins are the things that when people describe me, if I allow root sins in my life, I will be described by fruit sins generally. People say, oh, Joe, he's an angry person. Well, like I said, we're not angry for the fun of it. So that's springing out of some root in my heart, okay? And just to clarify, this idea of some sins being root sins is not original with me. In fact, the Catholic Church for a number of centuries has some doctrine on this. It's not their doctrine I don't really agree with, and neither do I agree with their sins at the same time. They have the concept. So, and also I have some other counseling material that we use some of. The Catholics came up with 3. This other guy came up with 9, and I'm not really sure either one doesn't totally make sense. So in this study, I came up with 5, at least at this point. I guess I'd like to have the liberty to add to them if I see it. And I will describe, I have been asked why this list is what it is, and there's especially 2 I'll mention later on why they're not on this list. But let's just listen closely. For the 5 root sins I have, the first one is pride. And I'll just read some verses out of Psalm 101:4. Just listen closely. Psalm 101:4, verse 4 and 5. A froward heart shall depart from me, God talking. I will not know a wicked person. Whoso privately slandereth his neighbor, him will I cut off. Him that hath an high look and a proud heart, I will not suffer. We could go to 1 Timothy 6:9-11. It says this. But they that will be rich, those that coveting basically, will be rich, fall into a temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. But thou, O man of God, flee these things and follow after righteousness, godliness, faith, love, patience, and meekness. And because I will use this verse for pride and selfishness, I'll just go put up the next root sin. The reason I have selfishness and pride is, I'll just tell you briefly, is I've seen people that did things that were totally foolish from the pride aspect of things, but they were still very much serving self. So that's why selfishness is on there. It's not as many direct scriptures. But let's use 1 Timothy 6 here. It talks about money being the root of evil, or it's actually better to say one of the roots of evil. Okay, so I'm blessed this morning that I actually have a $100 bill with me. And I figure there's probably nobody in here that wouldn't take this thing if I offered them, right? I'm not sure if I can do that, but anyway, we'll still use it as a little prayer. Why would any of you that's brave enough to answer, why would you want this thing? For $100 more than you have, right? But again, why do you want $100 more than what you got? I mean, are you on? Just a number, right? So really, if we look at it, I'm talking about a wrong view of money, but really if you think about it, the love of money being a root of evil, the way that money is a root of evil is because it either promotes pride or selfishness, right? If I use it to buy something, so now look what I got, you know, you guys just missed it, I got this special thing, whatever it would be, it's pride, okay? And now if I just sit around and I keep this in my wallet or bury it underneath the tree somewhere and I can always sit in my house, I got a whole $100 buried out there. That's selfishness, right? I might not even tell anybody else it's there, but it's to make myself feel good about myself. It's I'm thinking about myself, okay? So, Keep that in mind. So the next one being selfishness, I also read 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24. Listen to this. And 23a. Excuse me. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 24. I got mixed up in my next one. And now selfishness isn't specifically mentioned, but just invert this verse. Let no man seek his own, but every man and other's wealth. And wealth here means well-being or good. You know, it's impossible to follow this verse when selfishness rules in my heart, when I have a root of selfishness. You can coat it with as many layers as you want to. You know, we see these chocolate-covered peanuts or raisins and stuff, and you dip them enough times, you can't really tell what's in there anymore, can you? But selfishness, I don't care how many nice layers of chocolate you put on top of it, it still pops out in one way or the other. It still brings forth a fruit, okay? Now, the next one I have is rebellion. I will read, I'll use Samuel, what Samuel talking to Saul after he came back there from, blanked out on myself, I think that was Amalekites. And he hadn't killed them all like he was supposed to. And Samuel says this to Saul. And Samuel said, "Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams." Then he goes on, "For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft." Wow. "And stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry." Do I really believe that? You know, I know a young man that had the first three of these root sins in his life. And so he was sometimes told that you're not following the church standard in a certain area, or other times his older brothers would pick on him about a certain thing, say you got bad attitudes. And I'll be honest with you, that young man was really clueless as how to get to be what others wanted him to be. And it was because he needed to be pointed to the roots that were in his heart. He really needed to repent from them, okay? The next one I've got is bitterness. I'll just read Hebrews 12, verse 14 and 15. It says this, "Follow peace with all men." Difficult for a bitter person. "And holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby," watch this, "thereby many be defiled." Be not deceived. Oh, excuse me, I'm getting... You know how frequently this root of bitterness springs up in a heart? And you know, it doesn't stop with the person that has it. It says, many be defiled. It goes on and on. How often, how sad that this happens in our churches in spite of this great warning, but it's there. Okay, the fifth one is unbelief. Maybe I'll be a bit gentler on this one. Unbelief can be a real struggle, and it causes amazing amounts of confusion. And so if you struggle with this, I'm not trying to be harsh in any way, but it's still a root that brings forth a wrong fruit. Hebrews 3, verse 12. "Take heed, brethren, lest there be in any of you an evil heart of unbelief in departing from the living God." Hebrews 11, verse 6. "But without faith," faith is the opposite of unbelief, "it is impossible to please him, for he that cometh to God must believe that he is." You know, it's so vital to have faith, to not have a heart of unbelief. Yet it's so easily lost. A person that struggles with unbelief generally does not feel like they're an unbeliever. It's so easy lost in the confusion and the fear that the enemy asserts into our lives. And I could, again, I guess this thing getting away on me time-wise, but there again, we can so easily have these things all wrapped up. So I know of a certain young lady that she struggled tremendously, even to the point of depression, of certain extent of suicidal thoughts and that kind of thing. And it was all rooted in unbelief. She didn't see or understand God, and her unbelief held her captive from doing that. And the amazing thing is, God helped her get rid of that root of unbelief. And today, as she reaches out in faith, all that other stuff has left. And that's so special. And see what these roots do to us. And another thing, I wish I had time, but I don't, is each one of these roots has an opposite Christian grace. And someday I'd like to focus on that opposite Christian grace. And they also have what I call an antidote. It's the thing that God gave us that if I struggle with this root, it's the hoe, the poison, whatever you want to use to get rid of that root. But that's another message as well. Okay, now, two questions I'll just answer briefly. One person had asked me why lust is not on this list. And quite frankly, it's because lust is a natural desire. Lust springs from natural desires that are proper in their time and place, but are directed in a wrong time and place. So that's why that's not in there. We'll get into that into the natural desire section. The other one is covetousness. Covetousness, in my mind, as I classify these, covetousness is a sin, don't get me wrong. At the same time, again, has a natural way of relating. So let's say somebody, for us guys, let's say our friend buys a really nice 22. It's natural to enjoy. If he shows it to me, there's a right way to enjoy that 22 to even ask him to shoot it, right? But it's if I go home and I just can't have peace. I don't have rest because I want that so bad, right? So there's a natural way to enjoy this thing, but it's when it flows over. So I also put that under natural desire sins. So I hope you can follow my logic there. Okay, so the next category is natural desire sins. I just pointed this at the trunk of the tree because they're part of us. These things are part of us, these natural desires. They're there. They're not wrong in and of themselves, but it's when they control me that becomes wrong. You know, when these things find their place, not in controlling, but in being controlled, they're not sin. I want to be clear on that. And that can be a thing of great blessing and beauty. So let's just start with a self-focus. Every one of us defaults to a self-focus. Just throw something at somebody or go hit them or something. You find that they're not worried about how your hand feels when it hits, right? They're totally worried about how they feel when it hits them. It's a natural thing, and that's not wrong. God built us that way to take care of ourselves in a way. But when I become self-focused to the extent that I cannot care for others, I can't think about others, that is putting it in a wrong place. It's now controlling. Covetousness, I already went over. Covetousness springs at first at the joy of seeing something nice, something I would enjoy having, and maybe my friend has it, into an attitude of I'm not happy. He has it and I don't, so therefore that turns into covetousness. Now, gluttony, covetousness, let me finish up. The natural tendency to be impressed with and desire what others may have. Now, gluttony, now listen carefully, this is not just overweight people by any means. What gluttony really is indulgence in good and needful things, but in a harmful way. It's when I take the good things God has given me. Is it food? Is it drink of some kind? Where it can be a blessing to me, but it goes from the servant to the master, okay? Another one I hope I can clarify this one, but desire for acceptance and belonging. Again, God has built us, and there's a message on each one of these almost, but God has built us that we want to be accepted by other people. We want to belong, right? And that's something we look for, and children look for it in a home, and they ought to find it there. But finally, as a Christian, I have to find my acceptance and my belonging in Christ and consider that sufficient. It's not saying that I can't find acceptance and belonging elsewhere, but it may not be the driving motive of my life outside of Christ. The next one is lust. And I don't know how to... I feel we often misuse this one. First of all, lust has a broader spectrum just morally, but I am actually focusing on moral issues here. But the other thing is, lust, when used in a moral sense, often predominantly becomes a man's problem. And I understand why, and that's not totally incorrect, because we do, as men, struggle with this and need to guard our thoughts and all that. At the same time, lust is not merely a desire to possess, as we men generally face the battle, but it's also a misplaced desire to attract and fascinate. And that, in that way, is we as genders fight this battle a little differently. We as men may face it in lust, in the way it's generally used in a desire to possess in a wrong way, in a wrong time. At the same time, God has built women, he built them very much with a desire to attract attention and to fascinate. And that it's a beautiful thing in marriage. But when you allow that to motivate you at the sewing machine or wherever else, in front of the mirror, you now have taken something beautiful and turned it into a lust. You're desiring something that does not belong to you outside of marriage. Let's see here. Okay, and again, I want to be clear. These are areas that some, or actually I should say all of us struggle in one or in some of these to some extent. But when we yield ourselves to God and we take out the root sins, these sins, even though the desire is still there, it becomes a manageable desire. And so let me give you a bit of an illustration. Just in my own heart and life, for years, like I told you, I struggled with some of these things. But the place that God brought victory to me is when I was willing to go into my heart and deal with the pride, with the selfishness, with the rebellion, with the bitterness, and with the unbelief that I found there. It did not necessarily take away the battle of natural desires. That was still there. I can still misuse those things at the same time. When I, by the grace of God, root out the root sins, it gives me power over the natural desire sins in a way that I cannot have without. Okay, moving on here. Fruit sins. I've got a pretty good list of these. And I want to reiterate, I'm not trying to excuse or lessen the sin by putting them into this category, if it's a fruit sin. But it helps me to understand where I need to start in dealing with the issue and also how victory is possible. So I covered anger, frustration, impatience. We could go on to a critical spirit. Again, a critical spirit, when you see a critical spirit, somebody has a critical spirit, it's springing out of something else. They're struggling with this because of some other area in their life that they haven't yielded up. Worry, or fearfulness, actually generally comes from unbelief, a large part anyway, also can come from bitterness and rebellion to some extent. Confusion is another one, a confused person, often again because of roots in their heart, often unbelief there. Resentment, of course, is directly springs from the root of bitterness. Doubts come from unbelief, and also they factor into some others. Discouragement can come from any number of the root sins. Depression. An unbelieving person will face depression, but so will a proud person at times when their pride isn't working out for them. Self-righteousness comes out of root sins. Unwise spending, meaning I go and spend money I don't have, I can't afford to be spending. As does miserliness, which is, I've yet to meet one Mennonite that's miserly, right? So I put a little bracket thing behind there that says thrift obsession. That comes a little closer home. I'm not saying it's wrong to be thrifty. Don't get me wrong. At the same time, when that's my overriding passion and that's what I talk about when I meet my friends is how I got this wonderful deal. And that's generally just where I cycle in this thrift obsession, I call it, since we aren't miserly. There again, it's springing out of a root of probably for pride, selfishness, some others. And then untruthful. Now this one might be a stretch for some of you, I don't know. But generally you meet somebody that just lies, even a compulsive liar. It's generally because they're trying to form a front or an impression that's actually not true. And so there again, you find it springing from a root. Untruthfulness or lying. Okay. All fruits, all these are fruits that spring from what I'm going to call undealt with and not surrendered roots. So often an angry person in our settings is told, don't get angry, don't lose your temper. Guess what? They universally know that already. But they need help in overcoming what they see. really make a difference when it's directed at what? Okay, what fruit is your life producing? What root?